Good morning. It's Tuesday, October 1st. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, what to expect from tonight's vice presidential debate. Remembering the glory and the scandal of the late Pete Rose, and the treatment that helped Jimmy Carter reach 100 years old today. But first, to North Carolina, where hundreds of thousands of people still have no power after Hurricane Helene. Duke Energy says the majority of its customers will have power back no later than Friday evening. But the company also pointed out many parts of North Carolina are still inaccessible, so it'll take workers longer to get those places up and running. As we explained in yesterday's show, the landslides and flooding triggered by Helene closed roads across the state, which means most of western North Carolina is totally isolated. No power, no internet, cell service has been unreliable too. Quentin Miller, sheriff of Buncombe County, one of the hardest hit areas, spoke to NBC yesterday about how that's complicating recovery efforts.
We're having challenges recovering folks. You know, when you're normally used to picking up a phone, you can't do it. Power. We have people here that don't have power. They don't have the ability to flush a toilet. And it's very, very challenging.
Some communities are setting up mobile cell towers and Starlink satellite internet to restore communication. FEMA is sending Starlink systems plus generators. Wireless providers have also enabled disaster roaming in the state, so people can connect their phones to any available network, regardless of their mobile plan. As we're getting a clearer picture of the devastation across the state, we're also hearing more stories of the terror people have been living through with no way to contact their loved ones. Buncombe resident Sam Perkins told CNN how he hiked 11 miles into the mountains to reach his elderly parents after he hadn't heard from them in 2 days.
I had done the math in my head and, you know, figuring how long someone can go without water, you know, nonetheless, if they need more immediate medical attention. And so at 48 hours, I decided I needed to try to get there. And I can't tell you how many landslides and collapsed roads and trees I had to cross to get to them. And so I kind of got more and more worried the more that I went up because it just got worse and worse.
He said it felt like crawling through a jungle gym of debris. He had never felt more exhausted, but he made it. And he found his dad outside clearing debris from the storm.
You know, just was the greatest relief I've had in my life, and just hugged him as tight as I could and bawled, and then went inside and found my mom and did the same.
Nearby communities like Chimney Rock in neighboring Rutherford County were effectively washed away by the floods. In USA Today, one local said what was once a town is now a river. CNN spoke to Lizzie Brewer, who managed to flee with her partner and their pets.
It was just unrecognizable when we were going around just looking to see if anybody was okay. I drive those roads all the time, and I couldn't even picture where we were anymore. And just knowing that nobody is ever going to be able to live there probably. And it's just really horrifying. It's sad because there's still people there that are really hard to get to, and we're really worried about all the people that are still there.
Election officials across the region are making emergency plans so that people displaced by flooding can vote. North Carolina is, of course, a battleground state, and there are worries about mail-in voting there. A state election official in Buncombe County told CNN the post office in the county is open, and 200 ballots were dropped in the mail yesterday. Tonight is the vice presidential debate, pitting Minnesota Governor Tim Walz against Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. Typically, these debates are seen as sort of less of a big deal, with lower viewership than presidential debates. An exception to that ratings rule case was in 2008, when then-Senator Joe Biden debated then-Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. With me now to talk about what we know about this debate and what the candidates have been up to in the last few days is my colleague Gideon Resnick. Hey, Gideon.
Hey, Shamita.
So set the scene for us here. The candidates are meeting tonight in New York City. We know that the mics will not be muted tonight. what else should we expect?
Well, look, given the fact that we don't know that there is going to be another presidential debate, this really might be the last chance for these campaigns to make their pitch to voters in front of a live national audience. And I think we're going to hear both of these candidates really fighting tonight to bring some of those undecided voters in critical battleground states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin to their sides. Also, of course, you know, juice turnout for the voters that are already thinking about backing either of these two tickets. To state the obvious here, Vance and Walz are both white. They're both from the Midwest. And I think they are both going to be talking about how their visions for the country should appeal to those critical voters in these states where any small amount here or there is going to make quite a big difference.
So let's stick with Vance for a second here. He joined the ticket at a time when the Trump campaign was feeling very confident about President Biden. Trump is said to like Vance's combative style. How might that translate to the debate stage tonight?
I think it's likely that Vance will be quite combative. You know, as we've talked about before, he has had this evolution from harshly attacking Trump, calling him at one time, quote, cultural heroin, to now being in this position where he really staunchly defends him and often in some ways takes pages from the Trump playbook. For example, the false narrative he promoted around Haitian migrants eating people's pets, these flat out lies. When we look at how Vance has been preparing for the debate tonight, he's been working with a Republican representative from Minnesota, a guy named Tom Emmer. Now, Emmer and Walz have known each other for quite some time, and there's some reporting out there that Emmer is trying to kind of subtly match the folksy approach of Walz in the prep and get Vance ready in that way. In terms of subject matter, we can expect Vance to, kind of as Trump did in his debate with Harris, attempt to portray Walz as too liberal. We could also hear Vance going after Walz's military record. You know, as you know, both Vance and Walz are veterans. Walz served in the Army National Guard for 24 years until he retired in 2005. Walz then ran for Congress, and a few months later, his battalion received an order about deploying to Iraq. So Vance and some other Republicans have accused Walz of ditching his unit to avoid the deployment. We should say that PolitiFact notes that Walz submitted retirement paperwork months in advance. And Walz has responded to this accusation by defending his service and anyone who did serve, Vance included. But this has all reminded Democrats of the Swift Boat accusations against John Kerry in 2004, which had a similar tenor to it. And the claims ended up being false against him. But one of the people that was involved in it was Chris LaCivita, who is actually currently serving as Donald Trump's presidential campaign manager.
Okay, talk to me about what Walz has been doing to prepare to debate Vance tonight.
So Walz has his own stand-in for Vance in the form of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. And the two of them in interviews have tried to argue that they are more authentically Midwest in terms of the values and the backgrounds they represent than Vance does. And beyond what we just mentioned on his military record, Walz is also preparing to be attacked by Vance on his response to protests following George Floyd's murder in Minnesota while Walz was governor. Trump and Vance have tried to paint him as a Democrat who sort of oversaw lawlessness in that aftermath. And on the flip side, Walz will almost certainly convey Vance as sort of a faux populist, you know, citing his Ivy League education and Silicon Valley ties. And as we've reported on the show, Shamita, Walz is sort of an atypical politician in the sense that he owns no stock and has a net worth similar to ordinary Americans, much more so than, you know, Trump, Vance, or even his own running mate, Kamala Harris. So we're certain to hear him talk about his middle class upbringing, value, circumstances, experience as a teacher, et cetera, and so forth. And, you know, one other thing that will be interesting to see here head to head is that Walz has done this kind of media blitz around labeling Vance and Republicans as, quote unquote, weird. And I think, you know, specifically, one of the things that's likely to emerge might be Walz targeting Vance for previous comments that he perceives as extreme, including Vance's prior hardline opposition to abortion, a position which he has apparently moderated since he's joined the Trump ticket.
Now, ultimately, these candidates are there to defend their ticket's message. And we know a lot of voters make their choices based on the president and not the vice presidential candidates. But what do we know about how voters feel about Walz and how they feel about Vance?
Walz is viewed more favorably in polling than Vance, but tonight's debate may well be an introduction for a lot of people to both of them, or, you know, to both of them more in depth than they had previously learned about before. And the slight interesting new spin here when we talk about this debate versus the last one is that people are, in fact, voting right now. So perhaps if someone's on the fence, they see something tonight that interests them one way or the other, maybe that's the thing that makes their final decision.
Well, we will check back in when the debate is over. Thank you, Gideon.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Israel has sent troops into Lebanon to target Hezbollah. Its forces haven't entered the country like that in nearly 20 years, since fighting a month-long war in 2006. Israel calls this a limited ground operation and says there are no plans for a long-term occupation. It's the latest escalation in a conflict with no clear sign of when it might end. Israeli airstrikes in Lebanon in recent weeks have killed more than 1,000 people and displaced about 1 million, according to Lebanese officials. In the U.S., tens of thousands of dock workers are now on strike. We talked about this on yesterday's show. Union members walked off their jobs at dozens of ports from Maine down the East Coast and all the way around to Texas. The strike began just after midnight. The union argues that the port operators have lowballed workers on wages, and in turn, the operators accuse the union of refusing to negotiate. Like any negotiation, the cost of not reaching a deal could be extremely high for both sides, and the strike could impact the whole U.S. economy if it goes on for a long time. Baseball's Pete Rose has died at the age of 83. His stats on the field would have made him a lock for the Hall of Fame, but the all-time leader in hits was banned from the sport for betting on the game. USA Today's MLB columnist Bob Nightingale wrote a piece reflecting on many conversations he had with Rose over the years, where Rose wondered if he would ever be forgiven by the league and mused that even players who'd been arrested or suspended for drug use had been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Nightingale writes, "No one played the game harder, no one cared more about the game, and it was all taken away." And finally, today, for the first time in U.S. history, a former president is celebrating a 100th birthday, Jimmy Carter. Nearly 10 years ago, his life was at serious risk due to skin cancer that spread to his liver and brain. Medical experts say the reason the former president is still alive today is because of groundbreaking immune therapy treatment he received. Back then, it was a newer, more experimental cancer treatment. But now, immunotherapies are a major part of the fight against cancer, along with surgery, chemo, and radiation. Carter's doctor says the former president got the same treatment as any patient, that the best thing to do for a famous patient is forget that they're famous. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. A men's health writer spent 10 days in silence at a retreat that blocks reading, writing, even eye contact. You'll hear what he learned about overstimulation and anxiety. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.